Good morning. We're going to be talking this morning, as Larry just read there towards the end of the passage, about being an example to others. This lesson is one that is kind of special to me. I'm going to be talking about Paul's and my mother and the example that she had. This is not meant to be a glorification of her in any way, but it's something to show the power of an example. Many of us, no doubt, have someone in our life that led a great example of what a Christian should live like. No doubt you'll be thinking about that person as well at this time. But if you're not aware, our mother passed away from brain cancer when we were still teenagers. And we had a neighbor across the street, kind of catty-cornered, and who wrote a letter to our family. I want to share some of that with you. I'll read the letter as we go through. But it talks a lot about our example and whether or not we realize that we are an example to those who we come in contact with. Without a word, as we've talked about in Bible class, and as we'll mention here again there in 1 Peter, talking about how without a word we can be an example to others and influence them in great ways. In Matthew chapter 3 and verse 8, that's exactly what I believe John the Baptizer was talking about when he said bear fruits. He was talking to the Pharisees there, and he says, you go bear fruits of repentance. Show me who you are. Show me who you have changed, or how you have changed by your example. He didn't need them to say words. He wanted them to show them this is who you really say you are. That's what your example is. So I want us to consider a couple things this morning. One, remember how influential our lives can be to those that we come in contact with. Realize how much of an impact we can have on others, but also question ourselves and see whether or not we are truly shining as lights in the world as we ought to with our example, by the things that we do, even without a word. And so I want to begin this morning reminding us how we are commanded to live as Christians. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 that we are to be salt of the earth and to be a light of the world. There in beginning in Matthew, well, I'm a few slides behind. Matthew chapter 5, beginning of verse 13, he says this, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. One of the very first sermons that I ever preached here at Springs was talking about light and salt and how we are to be light and salt out in the world to stand out as God's flavor and the guide to God for those around us. And that's exactly, as you look at Philippians chapter 2, that's basically what Paul is talking about here. Beginning of verse 14, he says, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. That means we don't live the way that the world lives. We don't do the things that the world does. We don't say the things that the world says. We are different. We are a light. We are to be an example to everyone that we come in contact with, to guide them towards Christ. That's what we're here for. Worship God. Fear God. Keep His commandments. But also to go out and teach and be an example both in word but also in deed. But along those same lines, as we look in 1 Peter chapter 2, we see that we are also to be have honorable conduct and good works that go along with that. There in 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter says in verse 11, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. It doesn't say by the works that you say, or the things that you say, by the works that you do, the things that they observe are going to cause them to glorify God. There's a lot in those two verses right there. But don't live like the world. Live a separate, different kind of life. Be an example so that others will in turn glorify God. That's what he's saying that they need to do. And that's what we need to do as Christians. We also see that we need to strive every day, as you turn to 1 Peter chapter 3, to win souls with our conduct. And that's what I was talking about a while ago. This is specifically talking about wives who have unbelieving husbands. But I believe that it can apply to different kinds of people in different situations as well. Again, let's remember what we read there in 1 Peter 3 and verse 1. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Now, I want us to look at the King James Version of this and compare it to what is said here. And I think it's a very interesting way that it is transcribed here. But in the King James, it says, "Likewise, you wives, be in subjection, to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may, without the word, be won by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear." May not mean much to a lot of people, but to me, that's a very interesting thing there. Instead of saying your behavior and your conduct, it says let your conversation. Well, how are you going to converse without using your mouth? And that's the whole point of what he's trying to say there. It's your action. It's the way that you live by that conversation. Sometimes we use the word body language. By the way you live your life, that's a conversation, that's a story that's living and that we are writing every single day. That conversation is the one that can win a husband over who's not faithful. But it can also win over friends and co-workers and those others that are not faithful as well. And maybe even those of our family when they see our conversation without words. But the question is, what conversation are they hearing? Or what conversation are they seeing that we are showing to them every day? Another thing that we are commanded to do as Christians is we are commanded to walk worthy and be fruitful. All these are things that we know, but I want us to be reminded of those before we get into the application of what we're looking at. In Colossians chapter 1, beginning in verse 9, Paul writes this, "For this reason we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that you may walk worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might, according to His glorious power, for all patience and long-suffering with joy, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in the light." What did Paul desire for these people? He didn't want them to live idle and worldly lives, but he wanted them to have active, righteous lives, remembering what God has done for them. That should be our motivation in all of these things. But we've got to make sure that we are walking in a worthy manner. That worthy is a hard word. None of us are worth what has been done for us. But as we walk worthily, in a manner that is as close to that as we can, that's what we are commanded to do. All right, so keeping those things in mind, I want us to consider what others may see of us and find out about us that we may not even realize. Like I said, this letter that I'm about to read, this lady, we played occasionally with their kids. And I mean by occasionally like 3 or 4 times total. As far as I know, their parents and our parents, besides a casual pleasantries, didn't really know much about in each other. But again, she had only lived there a few years, and she was able to see things without a word. Every bit of this was done without a word. But it's interesting to see the picture that is painted just from across the street. So I want to read it to you. "Dear Stephen's family, I want to express our sadness for you at the loss of your wife and mother. I regret that we weren't better acquainted with her and could have been more helpful to you at her lengthy illness and at this time of sorrow in your lives. Even though I didn't know Debbie well, I want to share with you just a few..." Excuse me. You read this all the time and it doesn't get you until you're standing in front of people and they're looking at you. "I want to share with you just a few glimpses of her personality that I've observed through the years of being her neighbor. I watched her going throughout her daily routine, leaving in the mornings in her nurse's uniform, taking the kids to school and returning in the afternoon. Her diligence and work ethic were commendable, and I know caring for others was a part of her everyday life. She always waved in our comings and goings and displayed a warm, friendly smile that radiated personal contentment. I can remember her at a high school event after she had gotten sick and gone through treatments. She was still smiling. Her love for her family and pride in her children was evident as I saw her from time to time attending various extracurricular functions at school. She was there in her wheelchair, which I know took great effort on both your part as well as hers. You relished and cherished the time you had together, and although it wasn't long enough, it is a precious thing in itself that people never learn. I saw you each Sunday as a family going to church together. I realized that Debbie's faith and personal commitment to the Lord must have been important to her and was something she wanted to pass on to her children. She helped train your beliefs and habits that will be with you throughout your lives, and surely you will share with your own children. Often we don't realize how our lives touch others, even those we may not know well. Debbie was a positive influence in my life. I simply wanted to share that with you. Sincerely, Jan Stevenson. Excuse me. The words of somebody who doesn't even know someone else. Like she said there at the end, she was an influence on my life, even though I may not have known her well. But really, she knew her well. If you knew our mother, that's her mother. Excuse me. What I want to do with the rest of our time, though, is I want to go through this letter. Not thinking about Mom. Not thinking about whoever you're thinking about right now who influenced you. But just thinking about what others can see from us that we may not realize that they see. So, let's get into that. The first thing that that our example can show to others is diligence and work ethic. I thought it was interesting the things that she said. I could tell her diligence and work ethic by the things that she saw. She didn't see her work, but she saw the way that she got up and she was dressed and always leaving at a certain time and making sure that those things are done. Again, without a word, all these things are seen. There's several passages we have here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10. If a man will not work, neither shall he eat. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he has denied the faith and worse than an unbeliever. So we can see that work ethic and diligence talks about your faithfulness as well. And also in Galatians chapter 6 and verses 4 and 5. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. And so there's lots of scriptures. Those are just a few of them that we're familiar with that show us and remind us the importance as a Christian. We can say, well, it's just a job. It doesn't have anything to do with church. But it does have a lot to do with a Christian and our attitude. The way we work. How are we to do all things? As to the Lord. And so that was something that people can see with us. They can see what kind of person we are. My father-in-law, when he hires somebody, he says you can tell a whole lot about a person by their truck. You go look in their truck and it's all messy and it's all over the place. You say, I can tell a lot about that person's life by their truck. So I don't ever let him see my truck because it's just a mess. And I know it drives him nuts. My garage drives him nuts. Because it's not orderly like he does it. But it does show something about us. I've got other things that are more important to me than that, and so I don't give attention to that. But it says a lot about our work. But there's so many people today in the society that we live in that they're too lazy to go to work. And it blows my mind. I just won't go to work today. I know somebody that went home, they quit their job, and they said, I decided to be a stay-at-home dad. You go to work. Wow. But then those that do go to work, so many times they're lazy in their work. And so that shows a lot about who we are as people. And so we ask ourselves, what sermon am I preaching by my work ethic and my diligence that I show on an everyday life. Christians should be workers, whether it's on the job or in the home, or especially whenever we're talking about things concerning that are spiritually concerning. That didn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? Those things that are spiritual, we need to show diligence in that. But another thing that others can see by our example is they can see the care and concern that we show for our family. Mom always made sure, and I'm saying mom, I mean, we know that parents work together and things like that, so I'm not going to specifically say dad, but understand that is involved in a lot of cases, but made sure that we had the things we needed, the education that we needed, the clothes, the love, and all that kind of stuff that we needed. In the time that we live in, so many children are being raised by video games and televisions and computers and iPads and iPhones and everything eye-related. And so we see that rubbing off into our society. We have people that's everything about them. But the Proverb writer, a lot of these are in Proverb 31, talking about the diligent woman here. But notice how he describes her there in verse 27. He says, "She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness." Back in verse 15, it says, "She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household." So we see what kind of parent that she is or he is by the things that they do, the way that they raise their children. But it's not just a one-sided love. It's a complete love, a love that shows both sides of it. That means discipline is also included with that as well. Solomon also had some things to say in chapter 13, in verse 24, about this. He says, "He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly." And then in chapter 19, in verse 18, he says, "Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction." I know I'm going through these fast. I'm sorry for all those that are trying to flip through the pages. But they're up there. You can go back and look at them later. But the point is, love is not the love that many show today as far as parenting goes. It is not just "I'm your friend." We've got too many kids that their parents are friends with them. They don't need to be friends. You can be friends later on. You need to be parents right now. And so we need to keep that in mind. We got parents that are children that are running the home there. But when you look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verses 1 and 2, it reminds us children are to obey their parents and honor their parents. It doesn't say parents obey your children, parents honor your children. It doesn't say that at all. Now as you look at verse 4, we can see a little bit more about what love is and how we can show the best amount of love to our children. And it says in verse 4, "You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." There is no better way to love your child than to teach them about God's Word. They may not like it. They may not enjoy it. I bet every one of us here has said, "Tomorrow is Sunday," and seen your children go, "Ugh." Because it's not fun. There's no games to play at worship. But it's the most important thing that we can give to them. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Yes, they may depart in some way at some point, but it's always going to be in their mind. That's not going to depart from them. And chances are they'll come back if they do fall away for a while. But again, in that letter, without a word, she was able to see care and concern for family. But is that something that we are doing for our children or have done for our children? I know many here don't have children living at home anymore. But consider that. How are you doing that with your grandchildren, if that applies? Another problem I see, and I've seen it for a long time, is that parents rely on Bible class to teach their children the extent of their spiritual knowledge. We can't do that as parents. That's not a description of a Christian parent. That's just things to think about. But another thing, besides just our care and concern for our family, it also shows, or we can show others by example, our care and concern for others as well. Now, even though mom was hurting, she was in her wheelchair, couldn't hardly get around, she still made sure to go and stop and visit the older people, because she thought that they needed help more than she did. And so she made a point to go and do that. You ask yourself, when did Jesus stop showing care and concern for others? Well, we know the answer to that is never. Even on the cross, remember he had compassion on those as he looked down. He made provisions for his mother before he died. Care and concern for others all the way to the end. What did he say? Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He did that for others. He was always thinking about others. His whole reason of coming to earth was for others. It wasn't for himself. And so we need to follow that same example. In Acts chapter 2, we see that the brethren there at that time, they showed that same care and concern, that attitude at least. In verse 44 and 45, it says, "Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and divided them among all as anyone had need." The first century Christians, they considered it everyone's responsibility as Christians to care for each other's needs. It wasn't, "I'll wait for someone else to do it for me. I don't need to do it. Someone else will always do it." That kind of attitude. They said, "This is our responsibility," and they made it personal. I have known Christians, and I'm not exaggerating, who thought it was a great inconvenience just to write a card for somebody. It makes you wonder, what about James 1:27? What do they think about scriptures like that? We're told their pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. If it's too hard to write a letter, how are you ever going to take care of widows and orphans? Now, growing up, I would see people go and visit the nursing homes and things like that every once in a while. But the whole idea of orphans and taking care of those children was, that's somebody else's doings. Because the church can't have anything to do with supporting orphans' homes. And so in my mind, orphan home is bad. Orphan home is good. But it's not the responsibility of the church. It's not an authority that we have to use our money in that way. So who does that fall on? You and me. But in my lifetime, I've seen Christians fall very short. And again, I can't say that I've seen everybody's stuff. I know that. But I have not seen that in the church. You say orphan and woof, close your mouth. You know, we've got this sacred selection thing going on. This is not an ad for them. But since that has happened in the last few years, I've seen more Christians get involved with orphans than I've ever seen in my entire life. It doesn't mean you have to go adopt somebody, but you can support them in many different ways. That's what we need to do. That's fulfilling James 1:27 here. But that's just something that we've got to make sure that we are doing. Where am I at? I'm sorry, I got off of my... let's see. Next point. I'm sorry, I'll get back on here. Another thing that we can show by our example is our friendly nature. Our kindness doesn't change just because our situation does, is basically what I'm trying to say there. We need to be a kind people. Again, even though Mom was in pain, she was frustrated because she couldn't get the words out all the time. She couldn't physically do the things that she wanted to do. Her smile never went away. She always was kind and friendly to those that she came in contact with. I've never understood it, but why do Christians who have found God and they know about the hope, they know about what's been done for them, why do we seem to be the most angry and grumpy and solemn people that there are? It's shameful to me to see that happen. And I've been a part of it too. I'm not saying y'all, I'm saying us. And I'm not saying anybody specifically here. I'm talking about just in my lifetime. I have been shamed by those in the denominational world that are so happy all the time. They're just friendly and bubbly. And we have all this hope and we are grumpy and sad and poor me all the time. Why? That makes absolutely no sense to me. Whatsoever. But in Acts chapter 26 and verse 2, we see Paul here. Paul and Silas are going around. We'll get to that here in just a second. This is Paul. He's been arrested. He's before Agrippa. This is later on. I'm getting ahead of myself. Acts chapter 26 and verse 2. When he's before Agrippa, he says, "I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because today I shall answer for myself before you concerning all the things which I am accused by the Jews." Even though Paul was arrested. Even though he's having to defend himself against accusations from people that hate him, he's still happy. I consider myself happy. I think myself happy. And he's getting to do that. How on earth is he able to do that? How is Paul happy in so many of the instances that he is in? But when he said that, what lesson did he teach to Agrippa? What lesson did he teach to those others who are around him listening in Agrippa's chambers? You know, he taught them a great lesson about confidence and all that. He taught the same thing we read there in James chapter 1 and verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. They could see beyond the immediate pains and problems of this life, and they could understand the value of suffering for Christ. but our joy doesn't just affect those that are, or doesn't just affect us, it also affects those who are around us. Now let's look at Acts chapter 16. Acts chapter 16, Paul is with Silas here. They are in Neapolis. Everyone is angry with him because they have cast out the spirit of the servant girl. Remember, they were mad because she had the power of divination through that spirit. And so he took that away from these people and cost them some things. But notice what happens here in verse 22. Then the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates tore off their clothes and commanded them to be beaten with rods. And when they had laid many stripes on them and threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to keep them securely, having received such a charge, he put them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks. But at midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. And notice, and the prisoners were listening to them. I think that's one of the most important parts of that verse. All the things that they had done, they'd been beaten, put in the inner prison, chained up and sitting there not knowing their fate. Because they just made a whole lot of people angry. But what do we see them doing? James chapter 5 says, if anyone is among you suffering, let him pray. If anyone's cheerful, let him sing psalms. What were Paul and Silas doing? They were praying and they were singing. They were praying because they were suffering. But they were singing because they were joyful that they got to suffer for Christ. In all things, they were able to overcome looking back to the cross, just as we should. You know, as children, we used to sing, I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Where? Down in my heart. Where did it go? We need to make sure that we still have it and that we're showing it to others that we come in contact with. Not moaning and groaning and poor me and this, that, and the other. If we're sad, we need to pray. If we're happy, we need to sing. That's what the example that we have. But another way, as you look at Philippians chapter 4, that we can keep this joy is through our contentment. Again, Paul is in prison again in Philippians chapter 4, beginning in verse 11. Notice what he says. I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Before Mom passed away, she gave all three of us a bracelet that had Philippians 4, 6 through 13 engraved on it. You know, it goes through whatever things are this, that, and the other. Think on these things. And the peace that comes through all this and understanding and all this. And then you come down to this, the last few verses there. Whatever state I'm in, to be content. And you understand what she was going through and the pain that she was enduring every day, it makes you understand it a little bit more. You know, she wasn't comfortable. She didn't feel good. Things were not going the way that they wanted to. She was afraid for her life. But that wasn't what was important. She was trying to teach us contentment comes through Christ. It doesn't come through comforts here in this life. It comes through Him and His hope that we have. That's what helps us to be happy and thankful. Yes, if all we think about in life are the bills we have to pay and the sicknesses and the problems and the hurts and aches and pains and all that, we're never going to make it through. We are going to be the gloomy Debbie Downers. But that's not someone that has hope. We need to remember our hope so we can have this contentment and be who God wants us to be. We tell a lesson and the joy that we show. Another thing that we can teach by our example is we can show others, a family, who are going to attend every time that we can. Every opportunity we have to go worship, we take advantage of that. That was seen by this woman who, to my knowledge, never even talked to Mom. I didn't think about it at the time, but people do see that. When our car leaves in the morning to go to worship, or on Wednesday night, people see that. Unless you live out in the boondocks, which is possible, and people won't see you necessarily there. But you know, the other thing that they see is when your car is still there. They see that as well. My neighbor across the street and off to my right, neither of them worship. They've been invited several times. They don't go, but I usually see my neighbor at least off to the side about every other Sunday morning. And we show our pleasantries and all that, and he gets his invitation, and maybe someday he'll take it up. But if my car was there on Sunday morning or Wednesday night, do you think he would notice that? Yeah. And he would come by and say, "Tim, what's going on? Something wrong? Why weren't y'all at church?" Even though he doesn't agree with it himself, he doesn't believe that he needs to do that, he could see it. And they would know there's something wrong because these people go to church. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm trying to help us to all understand that. The same goes for you. Your neighbors are going to see whether or not you are attending as you ought to. But a lot of this goes back to attitude. And I'm going to speak here in generalities here. I think for the most part this is very accurate. But usually whenever we don't attend services, it's something's wrong with our attitude. Back to that same thing that I've mentioned so many times. Our attitude towards God and worshiping Him is not what it should be. As a child, it was, do we have to go to church? Hopefully now we all say, do we get to go to worship? Because we understand what the church is and what worship is. And one is a privilege that we have, and one is a chore. Worshiping is not a chore. We get to go to worship. And whenever we miss it, I hope that we are hurting because of it. We're feeling it because we don't get to be here and assemble with the saints and be encouraged in the way that we are. But apart from a few extenuating circumstances in my life, every time that I missed, it was because I didn't want to have to go to church. And so I didn't. And so we've got to look at ourselves and see what example we are giving in that way. You know, and we can make excuses all day long. You know, I had a hard day at work, and I'm too tired to go to church today. And I think about people in Acts chapter 8. After Stephen was stoned, and the brethren were persecuted, and they were scattered everywhere, in verse 4, what do we see them doing? They stayed at home licking their wounds. They were home taking a nap. No. They were scattered everywhere preaching the gospel. Their persecutions, their bad day or bad life that they were having did not keep them from worshiping as they ought to, or to preach and do the job that a Christian does or is to do. I had one family back in Texas. They weren't there at one of the worship services, and I talked to them about it afterwards, and the dog wasn't feeling good, and so we stayed home. The dog wasn't feeling good, so they stayed home. So their entire family did not get the opportunity to worship God because their dog wasn't feeling well. I'm going to say this to Shauna, and I hope you're not upset by me saying it, but when Sunshine died, I don't know if I've ever known somebody that's close to their dog as Shauna is. She loved that dog. But do you remember that Wednesday night that she was there? And everybody knew something was wrong. I didn't know about what happened, but I knew something was wrong. But guess where she wasn't? She wasn't at home. She was here. And that was a great example. So thank you. But things like that, when I don't show up, two things happen. I don't encourage you, and you don't encourage me. When we choose to not come to services, it affects many more people than just ourselves. That's a very selfish way to look at it, to say, it's just me not going. No. You're hurting people when you don't come here. You're hurting yourself is the other thing about it that we sometimes don't understand there. But again, besides encouraging others, it also teaches our children a great lesson. When we show up and we're consistently going to worship God, it tells our children that, one, that is very important to us, and that we are concerned about learning more about God. But on the other hand, when we don't show up, it says, you know what, Mom and Dad aren't very concerned about this. It must not be very important because they don't want to learn more about God. I'm speaking in generalities, but I'm pretty sure that's pretty much right on. I can't speak for every single situation that goes on, but that's the way that I see this. A lot of it goes down. From my experience, that's what is going on. You know, we can tell people all day long how much we love God, but actions speak louder than words. We need to show them how much we love God, not just by coming to services. There's more to that. In our everyday life, in our study, the way we live, all these different things show our children how much we love God, because we're choosing Him above our own ourselves. And then the last thing that I'm going to talk about here that we saw in the letter, another way that our example can shine on people is that they can see our love and our faith in God. In Philemon verses 4 through 7, Paul is commending Philemon. He spends half of the chapter, or half of the book. There's only one chapter here in this book. But he spends half the time commending him for what he's done, and the second half he's asking him to go do something. But in verses 4 through 7, he commends him by saying, "I thank my God, making mention of you always in my prayers, hearing of your love and faith which you have towards the Lord Jesus and toward all the saints, that the sharing of your faith may become effective by the acknowledgement of every good thing which is in you in Christ Jesus. For we have great joy and consolation in your love, because the hearts of the saints have been refreshed by you, brother." Did Paul say that he saw these things that he did, the love and the faith that Philemon had? No. I've heard of it. Other people have seen it, and they're talking about it. And guess what? Because they're talking about it, and because they've seen the things that you have done, your love and your faith, it says at the end of the verse, they've been refreshed by you. They have been encouraged by you because they saw what you have done. You ever tried to do something and you're just afraid to do it? You just don't know about it. And then finally someone else does it. And it's somebody, you know, "Oh, they did it. I can do it as well." That's what he's talking about here. He can endure these things. He has this kind of love. He has this faith. You know what? I think I can too. I'm refreshed by that. I'm encouraged by that. And that's what Paul is talking about there to Philemon. But again, can others see our faith and our contentment to God? How can they see it? I'll look at James chapter 2 and verse 18. Again, a very familiar passage. "Some will say, 'You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works.'" How do you see my faith? By the way that I live, the things that I do, the things that I say, the places I go, the attendance that I have, dot, dot, dot. You fill in the blanks. All these things show others our love and our contentment, or commitment rather, to God. Our faith that we have in Him. And so those are some of the things that we see that others can know about us without us even saying a word. I have two more scriptures I want to leave with you, and then the lesson is yours. First one is Romans chapter 1, verse 16 and 17, where Paul says, "I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, 'The just shall live by faith.'" We should never be afraid or ashamed to be Christians or to look like one. I know in my younger years, there were times when I just said, I don't know if I want everybody to know that I'm a Christian, because I'm going to act differently than they do, and I'm not going to say the things that they say and all this. And I was ashamed to a degree, because I wasn't sure I wanted everybody to know that. I wasn't confident in that as I should be. And that grows. Hopefully it's growing with us. But we should proudly show Christ through our example. The other one I want to share is in 1 Peter chapter 4. Peter says, "If anyone speaks, let him speak as oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him do it with the ability which God supplies, that in all things God may be glorified through Christ Jesus, to whom belong the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen." Again, God should not only be glorified through our speech, God should be glorified through the lesson that we preach every day of our lives. The life that we are living, that we live, and the actions that we are showing. But I ask you this morning, what do your neighbors and your coworkers, your friends, your enemies, the strangers on the street or at the grocery store, what do they know about you? And the little glimpse that they get, maybe 5 seconds, what can they see about you. You know, that can go from the words we say, to the clothes we wear, to the way we act. It can be whatever your situation is. It can say a whole lot about you. You're teaching other people a sermon. And you're claiming to be a Christian, so you're saying, the sermon I'm preaching shows what I believe in. And so we've got to think about that and consider what they're saying. Do they see us working with diligence and the good work ethic that we should have, that we talked about? Do they see us taking care of both our families' physical and spiritual needs, but also the needs of others and caring for them as well? Do they see us being friendly and smiling as one who has hope and not one who hasn't a hope in the world? Do they see us attending services as we ought to and having the love and faith and commitment in God that we ought to have? You've got to answer that for yourself. What do you think you've been showing people? What picture are you painting? But maybe it is, as you consider that and you're being honest with yourself, maybe the picture you're painting isn't a very good one. It may be more of a Van Gogh and a little abstract thinking than what we may think is good art. Of course, you may think Van Gogh's a good, whatever. I'm not getting into that. Bad example. But you know what I'm saying. Maybe we need to change our palette a little bit. We need to start with a new screen and go from there. If that's the case, if you need to take care of that on your own, please do. But if you need encouragement and prayers of the brethren here, we can help you with that as well. We all mess up. And sometimes our example gets messed up in just a moment of not thinking. And it's hard to fix that example, but we have responsibility to do it. But maybe it is this morning that you're not a child of God. You've not been obedient, and you've not set that example or followed that example that has been set up for you. If you have any spiritual need this morning, won't you come and be baptized or do every need as we stand and sing?
Would you be free from your burden of sin? There's power.